Corn futures tagged fresh two-month lows as the funds continued to liquidate its massive long position. A price has gone low enough ahead of the March 30th planting intentions report. We'll discuss that and more today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. This is Dave Dickey. Later this half hour, we'll talk with Iowa State University agricultural economist Bob Wisner.
Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for representative nearest you. And with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.
Our panelists today are Matt Bennett of Bennett Grain, Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities, and Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities. Let's open today's discussion with this question. This week, corn futures broke to the downside through its 50-day moving average, and lead month May tagged its 100-day moving average. Meanwhile, wheat broke to the downside through its 200-day moving average, and the last three sessions tested good support at 458.5. In a nutshell, for bulls, the technical picture is mostly ugly. But did Friday's trade give optimism that the current wave of liquidation is exhausted? Mike Zuzulo.
Oh, I guess we'd say no, Dave, because it's going to be a long crop year. The wheat technicals, the corn technicals, the acreage psychology, corn ethanol now being a political issue, borderline political hot potato as the new farm bill and elections approach, those are all probably the biggest reasons we could find as to why the corn's liquidated this past week. At the USDA Ag Forum a couple weeks ago, the biggest number that stood out to me in the big, large group session when the USDA came out and said the middle class in the world outside the United States is going to double by 2020 to over 950 million people, and we're consuming 1,000 barrels of crude oil a second. Those kind of big picture things don't change, and you throw the weather on top of that, I guess we'd say this is still a correction in corn.
Well, let's look at it then more in the short term and ask if the tops are in at least until the end of the month, Pete Manhart.
Well, until the end of the month they might be, but I'm still looking at buying breaks in corn just from this week. I mean, we're, 429 something was the high. We got back to 93 area today and then went right back above the $4 mark. So I'm still looking to buy breaks down there in that 95 up to even $4 mark, thinking that we will down the road make new highs in the corn.
Pete, I'll stay with you. We had another round of planting intentions numbers this week, the latest Friday from Informa. It predicted producers will plant 87.8 million corn acres, 70.4 million acres of beans, and 59.8 million acres of wheat. Informa has overestimated corn acres each of the last 4 years, and now its corn acres number is just a touch above USDA. We've also heard this past week from ADM, Farm Futures, and the numbers are all over the board. What does this suggest for the planting intentions report?
Well, the planting intentions report at the end of the month is going to be an amazing watched report. But today's was 9.5 million more acres. Industry a month ago was talking 6 to 8. I think they're now talking 8 to 10. A lot of people were talking 12 and more. And I think right now, realistically, that 8 to 9 is going to be about it on the increased plantings of corn. And if we plant that many more acres, we're not going to increase or carry out. In fact, it'll go down.
Matt Bennett is both a broker and a producer. Matt, put another way, have not savvy farmers purchased enough seed to still have the flexibility to make significant changes in their planting mix depending on weather and prices?
I think there's been quite a bit of talk about farmers buying maybe even a little more seed than maybe what they foresee using just in case they're able to have a little bit extra corn put out there because of the weather. I believe, whenever you look at this acreage report, I think that there's always going to be looked at, it's going to be looked at with a little bit of skepticism because it will be weather permitting. And I do think, like Pete said, they're all over the board, the estimates are. But I think that even if the USDA looks at and says, hey, we could get up to 90, I just don't see that big of a number coming out. Partially because of the weather factor. And, we need a good spring to be able to put that volume, that big of a switch, more acres than what we had last year.
The National Weather Service issued new 30- and 90-day forecasts on Thursday. The former suggests a good chance of above-normal precipitation in the northern Corn Belt. And the 7-day outlook is for wet weather. With high prices, one would expect weather will be a significant market mover, perhaps session to session. And what advice do you have for producers to negate dealing with weather on a daily basis in their marketing plans, Mike?
Well, you bring up a real good point, Dave. I think no matter whether you think the corn high is in or not, this last move has been a wake-up call to producers before they go in the fields. We would ask you to really look at those crop insurance numbers, really look at your on-farm storage capacity, get some open orders in with elevators, get some open orders in as far as buying some puts at cheaper prices as the market would have retracements and go back up. Have your house in order before you go in the fields because this weather is going to drive us crazy. That's the bottom line for us, Dave.
Taking a look at soybeans for May, and this is week-to-week continuation chart. So as the March went off the board, we picked up the May in the week. May soybeans, a high on the week is 759, a low of 735. May soybeans settling the week at 753.5, and on a continuation basis up 7. The Noves, 793.5, down 6. Like corn, soybeans invaded some moving averages this week to the downside. For example, Lead May tested the 50-day moving average, but one gets the sense that bean oil may be supportive for weeks to come in this market. Do you feel that bean oil can lead the complex, Matt?
Well, it's certainly been talked about quite a bit. I think right now there's pretty good demand for bean oil. There's good demand down the road for sure. And you look at vegetable oil, palm oil, there's good demand for vegetable oil and bean oil. And I do think that with biodiesel demand staying strong, that I think that you'll be able to keep the complex strong. I think with beans, just as the whole complex, when you look at it, there's so much uncertainty right now. People don't want to necessarily drive any of the three, corn, beans, or wheat, down because of the acreage shift the pull on acres that we see. And I don't think anybody wants to necessarily get overly bearish just yet until we get a better grasp on the acreage numbers.
Taking a look at the corn, May corn a high on the week of 408.75, a low of 388. May corn settling the week at 399.5, down 8.75. December, 403, down 4.75 on the week. Friday, December corn traded in a 15.5 cent range or so. At one point was under its long-term uptrend line from last September's lows before putting in an outside up day. Is the 12.5 cent gap or thereabouts left over from the January USDA report safe until the planting intentions report? Pete?
I don't think it is. I think it wouldn't surprise me to see corn up 15 on any given day or down 15 on any given day just from all of the noise in the background. And that noise in the background, somebody talked about driving us crazy. The weather is one of them. These forecasts of rains for down the road, all of those kind of things could make it go either direction.
Old crop has been losing on the spread as the cash market has slowed. Will we keep the bull spread on futures heading into the planting intentions report? And why or why not, Mike?
We need to. July D spread in 1996 would say we will, because like 1996, 95 was a shortfall in supply and the Asian Tigers came in strong in early 96. History would say that is going to be the spread that leads us higher. The biggest problem this past week for us, Dave, was that spread. That front end falling means the trade doesn't need to ration anymore. We think they're wrong. Year-to-date commitments on corn are up 15.5% still. Livestock weights aren't driving that much. And we continue to see the ethanol demand go higher and higher, and we've got a lot of plants coming online this summer in the eastern Corn Belt especially. So we want that July D spread to keep the leadership qualities that it needs. If we go back to a carrying charge market, puts us back into the classification of how beans look right now. That doesn't support the demand-led rally. That would mean the trade would probably start looking more at supplies, less at demand. So your higher highs and your higher lows may be at stake in that case.
Taking a look at the wheat, May wheat, a high on the week of 472 and a quarter, a low of 446. May wheat finishing the week at 460 and three quarters, down 4 3/4. The July, 474, down 15 and a quarter. All three wheat exchanges have inviting technical targets. The Chicago Board of Trade, the 460 level in July could come under fire. Matt, we've been looking for a bottom in wheat for at least a month. Are we close to one yet?
Well, it would appear so. I think in, you know, whenever I look at our technical levels, yeah, some of them are getting violated. But whenever you look at the RSI approaching oversold levels, at this stage of the game, I know that there's been quite a bit of talk about wheat maybe making some improvements as far as how the crop looks. But I do think that, you know, the whole corn, soybeans, and wheat had a pretty rough week, couple weeks. And I think that whenever we get into this oversold nature, I think coming into such a big report, I don't see us driving it much lower at this stage of the game.
Taking a look at the livestock, live cattle for April, a high on the week of 102.92 and a half, a low of 97. April live cattle finishing the week at 97.10, down 4.65. March feeders at 104.82 and a half were down 32 and a half. Lean hogs for April, a high of 68.50, a low of 65.72 and a half. April lean hogs finishing the week at 64.40, down 3.55. Hog and cattle futures experienced a major meltdown this past week. The cash also not supportive. Is there anything on the horizon to stabilize the market for the next 2 weeks, Mike?
Yeah, we think so, Dave. We think last week was a fun liquidation. It was healthy, and we needed it going into spring. We like the way the cash index and the hogs in the lead month futures are lined up now. We also like the fact that the wheat pasture down in the southern plains is going to get better and better with this rain. That'll hold stockers back, keep them out of the lots, and keep, you know, the feedlots pretty thin. So we like both the feeder cattle and the cash hog market after next week.
Put on your speculation hats for a moment, if you would, please, and tell me, what is your best bet at the moment, Pete?
Best bet at the moment, I think, would be to make sure you're covered on new crop corn with puts and or K sales.
Matt?
Well, yeah, I agree. I think that as a producer, I want to have crop insurance bought. I want to sell a portion of my bushels. As a speculator, I think that we have the potential for higher highs, but I don't want to put all my eggs in one basket at the same time. I think that, you know, obviously we're all going to know quite a bit more after the acreage numbers come out, but still many people will tell you that as soon as the acreage numbers come out, it's going to turn into a weather market pretty fast.
And turn it from a different point of view, and let's look at a different commodity, copper, sugar.
We're in the sugar camp, Dave. We like the Bush-Brazil ethanol trade pact. We like the stocks to use going down 3 years in a row. We also like the monthly charts. There's a buy signal on the monthly, the moving averages, the 50-month and the 200-month are crossing over right now. We're going ahead and doing a little bit of long sugars with bought call options right now in anticipation that we will have maybe some funds move out of the metals and maybe some of the fund money out of the grains come back into the softs commodities here in the next 30, 60 days.
May oats finishing the week at 274.5, up 29.25, and again, that's on lead continuation charts.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. A brief but welcome surge of spring weather came to Illinois this week before a strong cold front brought it to an abrupt end. Temperatures soared into the 70s on strong southerly winds during the first half of the week across much of the state. Temperatures reached only the 60s on Monday in the north, but pushed into the 70s on Tuesday before the cold front crept through that part of the state early Wednesday. Central and southern Illinois enjoyed 70-degree readings all 3 days, with an 80 being recorded in Decatur on Wednesday. Temperatures were back to below normal levels on Thursday as colder air poured in behind the cold front. Precipitation this week was scattered for the most part, occurring with the showers and thunderstorms from late Wednesday through early Thursday morning. The heaviest rain fell along I-70, where up to an inch and a half of rain fell in some locations. There was also some light snow and sleet in northern Illinois as the cold air spilled in before the precipitation moved out. This weekend will be on the cool side, and another cold front will sweep through Illinois on Monday, bringing a chance for some light showers and a reinforcement of the cool air. Temperatures will begin to moderate by midweek as high pressure moves to the east coast and winds become southerly. That will also return moisture to the region, and there looks to be a daily chance for showers the latter half of the week. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
This is Dave Dickey, and our panelists today are Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities, Mike Zuzalo of Risk Management Commodities, and Matt Bennett of Bennett Grain. Joining us today by telephone is Iowa State University agricultural economist Bob Wisner. Bob received his Ph.D. in agricultural economics from the University of Tennessee in 1967, and he is a writer of numerous books on marketing strategies. Thanks for being with us today, Bob.
It's a pleasure, Dave.
First question for you comes from me, and that would be, in Iowa, what will be the mix of corn and soybeans come planting season?
We have a mixed situation geographically across the state. The southern, probably 40 to 45% of the state, because of the topography and soil conditions, I think we will see a rather limited shift from soybeans to corn. Central and northern parts of the state will see a bit more shift. At extension meetings this winter, when we've asked farmers how many of them expect to move 15% or more of their soybeans into corn, we've seen only a few hands in most cases. The meeting of, say, 80 or 90 farmers, we would expect maybe a dozen of them at most would have indicated that kind of a shift in the central and northern parts of the state. Earlier this week, I was down in the southwestern part of the state and with a group of probably close to 100 farmers. One person raised their hand when we asked that question. So I would, statewide, just as a rough guess, I would not be surprised to see somewhere between 7 and 8.5% increase in corn acreage in the state. But my impression is that there may be a bigger shift in parts of the eastern Corn Belt. Now, a lot depends on the weather. We are very wet out here. We've got fields with standing water. We need some very good weather in the next, in the next couple of weeks, because we'd like to see some tillage fertilizer applications. The last 3 years or so, we've seen farmers starting planting operations in Iowa around the middle of April. It's going to be tough to do that this year, and if they don't get the corn planted in a timely manner, that's going to reduce the amount of shift into corn.
Questions from our panel. Matt Bennett.
Bob, I've heard several people talk in the past few weeks that the biggest acreage shift is going to come from Iowa, Illinois, and maybe northern part of Indiana. Most people have said the biggest percentage is going to come from those areas. And so I guess I'm a little maybe surprised by a 6 to 8% shift in Iowa. If you look at, you know, nationwide, when you talk, I know you said maybe a little more in the eastern Corn Belt, What's your take on acreage? It's a hot topic, obviously, and everyone's wondering what the estimates are. We've got anything from 87 to 90 plus, so or actually quite a bit bigger range. But what's your take on acreage shift on corn, and it's not going to be one for one from beans. Where all do you think it will come from
at the national level? I'm expecting the planting intentions report probably 8 to 8.5 million acre increase in corn. And that's based on, of course, that survey was based on conditions at the end of February and the first several days of March. Some of that acreage is going to come from cotton into corn, about from indications we're getting down there, probably 1.5 to 1.6 million acres shifted from cotton to corn. Keep in mind, incidentally, in the states where that's most likely to occur, the three-year average corn yield down there is 129 bushels per acre. Compare that with in the Corn Belt, where we're looking at 160-some bushels. So it's not going to be the same quality of land that we have here. We'll see some shift probably from spring wheat into corn and beans. The Informa numbers this morning on spring wheat came out with less of a shift than some other reports had indicated. But keep in mind the North Dakota yield, the three-year average, has been 115 bushels on corn. So as we bring those extra acres in, probably some CRP acres, that gets back to what's the national average yield going to be. Will we be able to make 153 to 155 bushels U.S. average? I think it's going to be harder to do this year. It's obviously the weather is the final variable in that.
Pete Manhart?
Dr. Wisner, where would you be at today on your corn marketing plan on both sales and or protection?
Well, in the big picture, two things have been happening here that are very important to the ethanol expansion, and that's, as you know, the driving force in the grain markets. As that corn price comes down, it signals to people who have been planning ethanol plants and maybe put their operations on hold to take another look. And at the same time, the ethanol price has been going up. We've had 55 to 60 cents increase in state average ethanol price here in Iowa, and that's since the middle of January. Every dime increase in the ethanol price will raise the break-even price for corn by about 28 cents per bushel. So we've had a pretty good boost in potential ethanol returns as the corn market has come down and the ethanol market has moved up. And to me, that signals that the expansion is not going to stop, and if anything, may accelerate a bit. I'm expecting the corn market will give us a positive reaction after the planting intentions, and that this is going to be a very volatile market. The least bit of concern in weather will bring a very strong upward reaction in corn and in soybeans. So my view has been go slow on the new crop marketings. I think, reasonable to look at 10 to 15% sales if you're not already up there, but I would feel uncomfortable going much more aggressively than that. And hopefully farmers have taken advantage of those very high insured levels from the revenue insurance that were available this year.
Mike Zuzula?
Dr. Wisner, when you look at your demand side analytically, we're having a tough time with using the 96 year as a benchmark. In other words, for corn and beans both, do we lose a large percentage of domestic demand if we keep corn futures between $4 and $4.5 and bean futures between $7.50 and $8, or do we not lose that much because of this new energy issue that we're dealing with, unlike 96 and this rapid growth in Southeast Asia that seems to be lasting and not buckling with these higher prices? What numbers are you looking at as far as percentage reductions, or how are you handling the demand pace second half of the year?
I'm expecting for the upcoming marketing year that we'll see probably 350 to 400 million bushel shrinkage in combined domestic and export demand. Even that it's beginning to look like it might be slightly conservative. We've got a very good South American corn crop coming on. For the second half of this year, I think we'll see some slippage in feed demand. The first source of that slippage will be wheat pasture and wheat feeding in the southern plains and probably even in the southeastern U.S. I don't see a big drop in livestock numbers. Looking further ahead, out a couple or 3 years, I think it's likely that we'll see some shrinkage in hog numbers and probably tend to put more of the weight on through forage and pasture and cattle before we put them in feedlots. And in the export markets, the big key is how rapidly can South America respond to $4 corn and how much expansion will we have there.
Bob, thanks for being with us today.
It's been a pleasure.
Iowa State University agricultural economist Bob Wisner. And now a chance for a final word from our panelists, Mike Zuzulo.
I guess we'll reiterate the mindset, Dave, to get, you know, the house in order and get in contact with the people you need to get in contact with and do this before planning and really have a nice plan laid out. There are very, very many types of tools to use to have both upside and downside covered.
And this is the year more than many other years to use them?
Yes, sir, I believe that.
Matt Bennett.
I think the riskiest thing you can do right now is nothing. Protect some of these income levels while keeping the upside open. I like entering into put strategies to do so, and definitely take advantage of crop insurance this year. I know the date went past this week. Hopefully everyone is at a level that they're comfortable with crop insurance.
So even though corn has lost 50 cents, it is still time to do something now.
I believe that at this point, since we've lost 50 cents, a floor being put in place, leaving the upside open would be a better thing to do than to just straight up cash sale.
Pete Manhart.
I would expect you to protect the high prices that we have had by buying puts on up moves in the corn.
We would like to thank our panel, Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities in Lafayette, Indiana, Matt Bennett of Bennett Grain in Windsor, Illinois, and Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. That wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. Remember, you can access Commodity Week programs and listen to daily agricultural programming on your computer. Our site on the World Wide Web is willag.org. This is Dave Dickey.
Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn after corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for representative nearest you. And with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at willuiuc.edu.